members, this committee will come to order, please. Thank you. It works every time. Welcome to our hearing today. We have several bills to hear, and I have an announcement to make about our road trips. This committee will be making two road trips. The first one will be Friday, February 9th. We will meet in Coos Bay at the Coos Bay Hospital, and hopefully we will be able to begin at the 11. We'll have lunch and then continue from 1 until 2. We're working on the agenda. The second meeting will be March 9th, and tentatively we will meet at the hospital in Lebanon, which will be an easy trip. Coos Bay may be an overnighter for everybody, but Senator,
it'll be an overnighter for her.
That's right.
No, I think staff, I think, will go the night before to set up. So those are the two meetings that we're going to be having.
So what happened to the meeting at Cabo? That's not going to happen? Or?
Where?
Just a thought.
Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you so very much. My district, I know, will be very pleased to have the health committee there, and I know the medical community of Coos Bay will look forward to seeing you and hearing from members of the committee.
Good. Thank you, and thank you for hosting. Okay, we're going to have a public hearing. We'll start with the public hearing on Senate Bill 40, and we do have several people signed up to testify. Lee Beyer, John Brenneman, and Keith Howell. Would you like to all come up, please, Lee? You could all come up together, whether you can. Oh, we have four people to testify.
Sure.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I am Lee Beyer. I'm the chairperson of the Oregon Public Utility Commission, and I will note that I do have Rick Willis, our executive director, with us here. If you got any really tough questions, he gets to answer them. Not really. Mr. Chair, we have a couple of bills that you're going to be talking about today that have to do with our Residential Service Protection Fund, which is essentially a fund that the legislature established. Each of us who own a telephone and buy service pay $5 a month, or $5 cents a month into this fund to support four basic services, two of which we'll talk about today. The first bill, Senate Bill 40, Mr. Chair, is a proposal by the Commission to actually ease up the standards to make it a little easier on Oregonians who have a need for hearing assistance devices to get these devices. Under the current law, in order to qualify for a device, you have to have a certification from, a medical doctor, an audiologist, which we thought in retrospect is probably a little more stringent than is necessary. And so what this would do is shift that requirement to a certified hearing specialist. Again, these are people that the state licenses, and they're people that people with hearing problems are going to be in contact with to meet their needs, and just makes it a little easier for them to do that. And that, Mr. Chair, that indeed is the essence of what the bill is all about. I've got longer testimony, but that's really what it is. And I think Mr. Brenneman and the other gentleman have some comments about that.
Okay. Let me, while you're there, we're not going to have a, we didn't post a work session on these bills, so we'll have two public hearings. Now, I can open a public hearing on Senate Bill 41, and we can deal with both of them.
Chair?
Yes.
Just a correction in Mr. Beyer's testimony. He said, because he said on the record that it shifted it to hearing aid specialists, and what it does is it includes hearing aid specialists.
Yes, I'm sorry. And I guess I should have said also, this is serving about 4,200 people, Oregonians, currently.
So let's stay with Senate Bill 40 for the time being. John, did you want to?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Brenneman. I live in Wilsonville and work here in Salem. I have six clients, and the Oregon Hearing Society is one of those clients. In the past, I have always had one person over the last few sessions that always comes in and and writes up the testimony and on the letterhead and submits it. He happens to be out of state. And I ask the president to round me up a hearing aid specialist. And that's why Keith Howe is here today. He's from the Dalles. I appreciate you listening to us at the early part so we can get on the road.
Okay.
Keith not only has never testified in front of a committee before, he's never been in the building. So we're here to support Senate Bill 40. We do not have written testimony, but I can round some of that up later. So I just ask that you hear from my client, and he can answer questions as they profession.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Keith Howe. For the record, I am from the Dalles. I'm on the Oregon Hearing Society Board. We're a group of about 60 certified specialists in Oregon, and basically I'm here just because this is going to help people get these a lot easier. That's what it boils down to. I don't know which part.
I wished everybody would testify that clearly.
Now, what is your history of involvement with the board?
I just recently got elected to the board, actually. I've been a member since I started this about, I became a specialist about 3 to 4 years ago, and I run a practice in the Dalles.
Okay, good. Thank you. Any other testimony?
Very simple, Mr. Chair. Okay. It will make it easier for attorneys who need assistance.
Okay, then maybe I will go ahead and close the public hearing.
You're on 41.
I know. 40. Okay, so let's go. We have a public hearing for 40 as well. I opened that, so go ahead. 41.
Thank you. Once again, Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 41 deals with a different portion of the Residential Service Protection Fund. This one has to do with where we provide phone assistance or lifeline assistance to low-income individuals so that they may have phone service to meet their needs, too. This one, and there's a couple amendments that I'll get into in a minute here, but the intent of this one was as we looked at the program, we noticed that people that were in residential facilities, and I think of them primarily, the term that the DHR uses, residential care facilities, but I always think of them as assisted living. And essentially, these are people who are not in a nursing home, but that are in a care facility living in one of those things. When you go into one of those, as I think everyone on this panel knows, and your Medicare supported, your entire, well, not all, but all but about $100 or so of the money goes to the facility. It's part of law. But in our guidelines that we have to look at the full dollar amount, and the bottom line is that it often means that we can't provide telephone assistance to people in care facilities. What we're recommending to the legislature is that you adapt that or change that requirement and allow us to assist these people who are in residential care facilities specifically. That's the intent of this legislation. I think that's helpful from my perspective. What this program does is it helps people keep contact with their families and the outside world who have limited mobility in essence. They're in these care facilities. They're predominantly the elderly on Medicare. Medicaid. So that's what this is all about. And there are a couple of amendments that you have in front of you, I think you have in front of you, and they are essentially to make changes that
we don't have them.
Mm-hmm. No, we don't have them.
We will be bringing you amendments.
Okay.
Apparently, we haven't got them out of LC yet. I thought that they were out. They essentially have. We'll make two changes, and we'll talk about them when it comes up for a work session. One of them defines residential care facility to bring in alignment with DHR terms, because we don't do the certification. We look to DHR to do the certification to tell us who's eligible. We just manage the fund. And the second thing has to do with definition of income, and it aligns our standard, our requirements with DHR so that we can do that. Makes it easier. It's more efficient to the program. Allows us to extend this care to more people who need it. Bottom line, you have to answer any questions.
Okay.
Good idea. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
I would like to say, Mr. Chair, that we only bring simple, good ideas to the legislature.
Good.
Pardon me?
Who's DHR?
Department of Human Resources.
DHS. That would be DHS, wouldn't it?
Excuse me, Senator, I'm still stuck back when I was here and we called it something else.
I'm just trying to correct your testimony.
Okay. I'm slow to change.
Okay, good. We will close the public hearings on Senate Bill 40 and Senate Bill 41. Thank you very much. And when we get the amendments, we will pass these.
Just work session on those, Mr. Chair. I think we'll be fine.
We'll just do the work session on them. Thank you. Okay, we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 144. And we do have a list of testimony of those who have driven long distances. Ernest Wick, Linda Russell, Thomas King. Mr. Wick, I think, drove from Pendleton, right?
Yes.
Okay.
All bare pavement.
All bare pavement.
Hey, enjoy it.
Okay. A continuation of a discussion on Senate Bill 144. There has been quite a bit of material that came forward in the meantime. All good. The Hospital Association has reported that they do support it. They don't have any problems with the bill. So, okay. Linda, do you want to start?
Chair Morissette, members of the committee. Yes, I would. I was asked by the Oregon Medical Association if we would add a number 5 to Section 4, which is the exempt clause, asking that physicians that are licensed under 677.100 through 677.228 be added to the bill so that they are exempt as well. From having,
in other words,
or under our authority.
You are having an amendment drafted to the bill.
We will, yes.
Yes. Okay. Did you start that process?
I think we did start that process today by agreeing that we would do it.
Well, okay. I guess
anybody gone down to that little room?
I will. When we leave here today,
you
I will.
Need,
that's my first stop.
If you need help going down there, we will.
Will you help us?
We'll do that. The committee staff
Thank
will
you.
Help you.
Thank
because
you.
Because you need that to have the to have it drafted. Good. I think that is appropriate. We'll discuss the bill. Do you have other comments to make? Other questions? Yes.
I just have a question. When you're defining in Section 1 on page 1, defining medical imaging technology means a school of medical imaging, and they have to be accredited by, it says, a national or regional post-secondary accreditation body, a graduate of which is qualified. Anyway, I was wondering, is the national or regional, can there be anybody form an accreditation body? Or is it pretty stringent?
It is very stringent. In this language, we actually... I'm sorry. Excuse me. I can address you right.
Yeah.
Chair Morissette, Senator Moniz Anderson. We had drafted and were real specific with the particular accreditation bodies in our original legislative concept. But Legislative Council told us this language, and you'll see it throughout the bill, it was changed because it needs to be broader so that we don't come back and visit here every session. But it's very narrow. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking there's only a couple. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Chair Morissette? Yes.
I'm Ernest Wick from Pendleton, and I'm just here basically to answer any questions and clarify any issues that you might have.
Senator, would you?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. During our discussion of this bill, when you were here before, we talked about the clinics and the MRI clinics that are sprouting up and the fact that the people did not have training and so forth. After the committee meeting, I was told that most of the clinics are owned by licensed radiologists, and that was not brought out in our discussion, and I'm wondering if I have the right information. Is that true?
Quite a few of them are.
Go ahead and introduce
I'm
yourself.
Sorry.
Yeah. Chairman Morissette, Senator Bridger, my name is Thomas King. I'm with the State Society, a radiologic technologist. A good number of the MRI magnets are in radiology clinics, but they are not limited to radiology clinics. And so if you're a licensed practitioner in the healing arts, you can get yourself a magnet.
Follow-up?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Chairman Morissette, Senator Anderson, what I'm basically trying to clarify is Senator Berger is correct. A majority, a lot of them are in radiology clinics, but there is no limit to that, that you can have a freestanding clinic and be an internal medicine doctor or a family practice physician. You can have a magnet in your sight. So it's not practice specific.
Okay, just follow up on that then. I'm more worried about those that might be sprouting up that aren't licensed. Or don't have a licensed radiologist with them. Is that's against the law now?
That part would be outside the scope of what we cover. We're more the ones who actually operate the equipment. As far as citing them goes, I believe somebody should talk to probably either DHS, Radiation Protection, and some of them have federal requirements as far as siting goes as well, but that's kind of outside our area.
What I'm asking is they really can't. Anyone can't just get a magnet.
If you're a clinic, you're a physician.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Chairman, Senator Anderson. If you're a physician, you can get a magnet.
Yeah, that's
right.
Thank you,
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, you just said the word I was interested in, that is the operator. I I really don't care if a radiologist owns this machine. I want to know who's operating the machine. That's what we're going to address. We're going to deal with the operator being properly qualified.
Good. Other questions? Other comments?
Mr. Chair, I think with the amendment, I think we got a bill good to go.
Okay. Seems to be the case. Thank you very much for being here. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 144, and when the time comes, we will adopt the bill. And Andy Eastman is in the back of the room from the Hospital Association, and again, the Hospital Association is fine with the bill.
Thank you.
Okay, we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 59. And we have a work session. Stephen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Cafori. I'm here today representing the Oregon Acupuncture Association. In 1989, I came to the legislature as a lobbyist and asked the legislature to resolve a problem that we were having, and that problem was that insurance companies that did cover acupuncture, a number of them were paying MDs to do the acupuncture, but were not paying acupuncturists to do the acupuncture. And so we did not want to get in the situation of mandating that acupuncture coverage need to happen, but we were concerned that if an insurance company is going to choose to cover acupuncture, that it pay acupuncturists to do that work. So we got a bill passed that required that if an insurance company should choose to cover acupuncture, that they must pay acupuncturists in the same way that they pay MDs. the bill passed, and it was going along fine until last year. One of our members was talking to somebody at the Department of Health and said, did you realize that your bill has been sunsetted for several years now? And he called me, and I said, I better check this out. And I found out that back in 1985, before I represented the acupuncturists, somebody passed the bill. It might have been Senator Cruz, for all I know.
Not that long ago.
Not that long ago. Somebody passed a bill back in 1985 that said that all that bills that were mandates were going to be sunsetted after 6 years. And it was actually a little broader than mandates, because I don't believe that my bill is a mandate. And in fact, leadership said at the time it was not a mandate. But it turned out that sure enough, my law actually right now is not in effect. So covering my embarrassment to my clients, I said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. I'll go down and get a bill to reinstate it. So what we have here in Senate Bill 59 is nothing more than a bill to reinstate the law that was sunsetted. Now, it does this by a little bit of a complicated method, and as it takes the words of that old law and restates them and then repeals the old statute. That's what you see on Section 3, Line 20. 743.722 is repealed. That just repeals the old language, and then all that black language above it is the old language reinstated. We didn't know that this was sunsetted because none of the insurance companies seemed to care. They were just happy as can be to have acupuncturists provide the acupuncture services and reimburse them. We have had no opposition from anyone. During that time, everything has worked well, and we have no opposition or no to this bill. I will say I did talk to John Powell just a few minutes ago, and he is suggesting an amendment on line 12. He would like to put a period after the word acupuncturist, eliminate that line, and eliminate line 13. It has to do with technical ways that insurance companies work, and I don't pretend to understand how insurance companies work, but he assures me it's only a technical change, would not change the meaning of the bill at all. And as far as I'm concerned, that's perfectly acceptable.
Okay. John, did you want to comment on that?
I'd point out, Mr. Chair, that most of the insurance mandates that are on the books sunsetted a long time ago. And they're just sitting on the book, sunsetted. That's the reality.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Powell, representing Regis Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Mr. Chairman, I think since this is a veteran committee, I don't have to repeat the entire mandate 101 that normally I give in a situation like this. And it's not that Regis or any other insurance company opposes the services provided by any provider or any particular service that might be mandated. It's just that a majority, and I want to repeat that, a majority of workers covered under health insurance today cannot afford to cover their dependents. And the higher costs that are attributed to health insurance policies, that number, the number who can access insurance for the dependents decreases. And that's why we violently oppose mandated benefits, and we'll be before you, I'm sure, on a whole host of bills that have been introduced and are to come that will mandate those services. As Mr. Kafoury pointed out, this bill is the reestablishment of some language that is a hybrid of a mandate, and it only says that if you pay for this when administered by an MD, it would also be paid for by an acupuncturist. And the amendment that we're suggesting clarifies or allows the insurance companies to go about setting their reimbursement the way they currently do. And in the case of Regents, we contract with these providers, and the rate is negotiated between the insurance company and the provider. This has language in it that it would be set according to the customary and usual fee in the area served, and they don't develop their reimbursement systems that way. That would require a survey of all of the people in that business and then taking some kind of an average of that, and we just don't do it that way. So Mr. Kafoury has kindly accepted that as a friendly amendment to the bill, and we'll get that prepared for you.
Mr. Chair, if I might just say two quick things. One is that I agree with Mr. Powell about the cost of health insurance. I want to note that if you go to an acupuncturist and have some needles stuck in, it's a whole lot cheaper than going to the doctor and having them operate on you.
Not for me, Mr. Chairman, because I have to buy new underwear.
There's a new method of acupuncture called ear stapling. We're going to hear that bill later. Senator George.
How's that different from Pearson?
I'm trying to get control. I'm ready. We have, what, 26 mandates?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, at least
26.
It's over 30.
Yeah, I thought it was in the 30s.
It's in the 30s.
Do we have any idea what percentage of increase that adds to a policy? In other words, if none of those were mandated and you could offer whatever you wanted or sell option A, B, C?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, not in a any specific way. There have been studies done that show about 10%, most likely, of the cost. The problem with mandates and again the sunset provision, the perhaps best part of that isn't that these things sunset, because health insurers look at clinical evidence through their medical directors, and they all have medical staffs that make these decisions, and they work with professionals in these industries to look at actual outcome of the treatment, and they will add them, obviously, as Senator Kefauri said, if indeed you can get it done for less, through a methodology, and there's clinical evidence to show that, they will add that to the policy. Regents is a nonprofit. We exist to serve the membership that we serve. We have no stockholders to please, and it is indeed the efforts in pharmacy and other medical technology that we try to drive costs down so people can afford this product. So some of those mandates we would not do away with, probably a lot of them, even if they were off the books. As Sifori said, it doesn't change the way they operate. They don't watch these things. They watch the medical evidence, which brings me, Mr. Chairman, could I just have 1 minute of liberty about the previous bill you heard? Imaging is a big problem, and it is important that the people that run these machines know what they're doing, obviously. But there is an additional step to the question I think Senator Verger asked, and that is there are investors who go around investing in these, and maybe there is a doctor involved, but indeed there's a situation in this town which may come to a legislative head, where our company has closed its panel of providers because they think three of these machines in this community is enough. Somebody told me the other day how many are in Portland, and I think there's more than there are payday loan operations. but the bottom line is, it is somewhat problematic. And so we will engage you at the proper time when those issues come up. But I didn't want to let that out.
Senator George shopped around for the cheapest one he could find.
Yeah. I didn't. I was sent there.
And he still has a headache.
The stories he tells.
If I could have a little follow-up on Mr. Powell, because he is right. Just looking at what mandates are on the books and seeing what the reduction would be doesn't get us anywhere, because a large number of them would be covered under policies anyway. But one thing mandates do is they limit consumer choice, and that is something we never talk about. Because there are some mandated services that some people probably wouldn't purchase because it's not relevant to them, and so that drives up the cost of their insurance. And just a little thing. We're starting the cycle again. Yeah, so.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, in that line, I think I was starting to say and didn't finish. The review of mandates is important, too. For example, the PSA test. Mm-hmm. We all hope that in the near future there will be a better a test for prostate cancer, because the PSA test leads to a lot of unnecessary biopsies because of false readings and that sort of thing. That's on the books as a mandate.
That's the men's equity bill that we passed last time.
I don't think it's very equitable myself. But
you think equitable when they take those plugs, but it's near childbirth time. I think it's the women's equity bill. Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can we have this witness on standby in case we have a real bad day? We can all.
Oh, he's always on standby.
Yeah, that's right.
He doesn't miss much.
Mr. Chair, if I might just repeat one more time for the committee that really understands this. This is not a mandate in the sense that the insurance companies are not required, and we have never asked that insurance companies be required to provide acupuncture. It's only if they choose to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Okay, we will close the public hearing and adjourn.
We got some bills, a couple amendments, and...